of the unfortunate few. It seems to me that while modesty and self-effacement are respected virtues, as we progress in our program of civic activities, we can only meet our objectives if they bear the label of the Telephone Association of Pioneers. Only in this way will the people of our two countries be made aware of the existence of this association and its ideals and purposes. And in only this way will the organization receive the credit to which it is entitled. If we bring this identification to each activity in which we engage, I firmly believe that within a short time, the Telephone Pioneers of America will be recognized and appreciated as one of the great social and community organizations of our nation, a goal most worthy of attainment, and I commend it to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I noticed that he spoke about supporting all community institutions. I also noticed he was talking about supporting those community institutions that stamp us as free men. Thank you very much, Mr. Gillen, for that fine talk. Now, our next speaker was born in Fort Gaines, Georgia. He graduated from the Alabama Polytech Institute, which is now Auburn, with a Bachelor of Science in Engineering degree. I don't know how the University of Georgia and Georgia Tech let him get away, but I guess he wasn't a football player. After helping win the big war as a lieutenant in the infantry, he entered the Bell System in 1919 in the Long Lines Department. His entire telephone career has been in that great organization. He rose steadily and became vice president of the American Telephone and Telegraph Company and head of the Long Lines Department in 1949. And we lay a little claim to him here in Cleveland because he was with the Long Lines in Cleveland here from 1927 to 1936. He's an excellent executive, has a wonderful sense of humor, and an infectious smile. I present to you the president of the Telephone Pioneers of America, Henry T. Killingsworth.
Hello, pioneers. I think we've just about got this one made. Thank you very much, Mr. Sparling. Your friendly greeting reminds me of the farmer who got out of bed one bitter cold morning and went out to the barn to milk his cow. After he finished, the cow turned to him and said, "Thanks for the warm hand, old boy." Within a very short time, a matter of a few hours now, we will write the end to another chapter in the history of General Assembly meetings and go our respective ways. It would be a mistake, however, to think that this will mark the end of, or even a break in, association activities. The discussions that we have had here, the plans we have laid, and our expectations for the future will be taken back by you to your home chapters. There, these discussions and plans and expectations will find expression in the day-to-day things pioneers do. What we have done here has been like the dropping of a pebble in a pool of water. During the months to come, the resultant ripples will circle out to reach all boundaries of our great association and perhaps even beyond. One of the themes of this meeting has, as you know, been self-development. It has not been greatly publicized and has been dealt with primarily in terms of classes in various courses of study. Perhaps we do not need to stress any other aspect of this activity as far as pioneers themselves are concerned, but when considered as an example that we might set for others, the self-development program could have a much broader and more significant impact. It could be thought of as an exercise in self-reliance, as contrasted, if you please, with the public welfare programs about which we read and hear so much these days. It seems to me, as I have read and listened, that a serious sickness has gripped many American citizens. This sickness is not mentioned in medical journals, but it has nonetheless reached very broad proportions. Indeed, it knows no national boundaries because it is a virus of the soul. One of its names is insecurity. It has other names too, but they all seem to have meanings which are the very antithesis of self-development, self-reliance, and self-dependence. Those who are afflicted with this disease think only that help from the outside will alleviate their difficulty. Perhaps it is time for them to bring the pronoun I back into prominence in their thinking and in their attitudes. Not the I which has no appreciation or recognition of others, not the I that imposes its will on lesser beings, but the I whose security, whose sense of worth, whose acceptance of responsibility is based upon inner strength, not upon outside help. The I that does not lose its identity in group living or succumb to pressure to conform. Inner security is the only real security. All else is just veneer. We in this room represent a great multitude of veteran telephone people, about 200,000 of them. We have worked in the telephone industry no less than, and in many instances, a great deal more than 21 years, and we have earned the right to be called pioneers. One thing which is always impressive about pioneers is the courage and realism with which they accept the challenges that confront them. Well, what are we going to do about this challenge of insecurity? How will a class in public speaking or a group discussion of great books solve the problem? Well, as a very minimum, these self-development courses will provide constructive outlets for the creative energies of our people. In offering them, we will be supporting activities from which people will develop more self-confidence, greater self-reliance, and greater skills. Participants will find deeper and more satisfying expressions of their own personalities. These are very worthy objectives, and the experience, attitude, and philosophy of telephone pioneers can make a great contribution toward their attainment. My brief message to you tonight, therefore, is to think deeply on these things and face up to them with true pioneer spirit. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kelly. That was right up to the long line standard. He's made a marvelous president of the pioneers, and I hope you notice that little humor that keeps showing through. Now we come to the part of the program we've all been waiting for. The career of our final speaker of the evening is indeed a great American success story. He was born in Minnesota and graduated from the University of Minnesota in 1924 with a Bachelor of Science in Engineering degree. He entered the Bell System in June 1924 with the Northwestern Bell Telephone Company. He started at the bottom. In fact, at the bottom of the pole. He was a groundman in the line department. And after progressing through many assignments over a span of 18 years, he was elected vice president of operations of the Northwestern Bell Telephone Company, and I would say that was certainly par for the course. In 1949, he came to the AT&T in New York and served as vice president of the long lines and vice president of operations and engineering. We lay a little claim to him. He was also a member of the board of directors of the Ohio Bell Telephone Company. In 1954, he became president of the Western Electric Company, and in 1956, president of the American Telephone and Telegraph Company. I found out in looking over his biographical sketch that he is also a musician, that he played drums in his college day. Now, in the recent years, Lucius Rowe and I played dual piano at the president's conference, and now we have found a drummer. He believes that the greatest assets of the Bell system are not its poles, its wire, and its cable, but its people. He always respects the dignity of the individual. And I predict he'll go down in history as one of the truly great presidents of the Bell system. I present to you an able executive, a great telephone man and pioneer, but more than either of these, a great American. The president of the American Telephone and Telegraph Company, Frederick R. Capel.
Walter, I must say you lay it on very thick, but I enjoy it. I'd like to make a few comments, a little extracurricular as to what I came here to talk about tonight on behalf of some views and reactions that I have to this General Assembly. I believe that one of the most important functions of anyone who assumes a responsibility of leadership in our business is to do those things that give him confidence and give him respect for and in the greatest asset any business can have. And my way of doing that, ever since I can remember, has been to take picks on anything about our business that I wasn't proud of. And I've been in lots of trouble with a lot of people in the process of fixing some of those things. The other is to get around and see and visit, be with the people in the business. And these assemblies are one of the most impressive occasions that I can find in all of the things I do. One cannot help but get not only the greatest pleasure you can have, but the greatest pride in our organization, greatest pride in the people, and most of all, confidence that no matter what problem faces our business or who takes picks on it, there are people in this organization who are above all the problems we need to face, and that's you. And I would just like to pay a great compliment to the people who have organized this assembly and all of you folks who have so actively and seriously contributed and participated in it. It makes almost anything that we have to do from where I sit in the Bell system look easy. Now, to get back to what the board of directors here got me here for. I guess maybe I hadn't realized until I came to Cleveland this trip that Cleveland was truly a historic spot in the annals of the General Assembly. And you've heard of the reasons for that. But if it weren't already famous in the pioneering business, certainly Carl Milner, Walter Sparling, and all of the folks who have been so active here have made it that way for time immemorial. Now this morning, I had the privilege of sitting in some of the sessions, and of course I've taken the opportunity to talk with others about what went on before. And I'm glad, for the sake of the pioneers and the great future that lies ahead, and for our business, that this matter of community service is taking hold, growing, and becoming so effective. Now, this needs very careful planning, as all of you well know, because it's very important to avoid missteps in an activity of that kind. But I think that we're building a sound base for expanding these humanitarian activities. And these ought to bring, and I'm sure they do, great satisfaction to all pioneers who take part. And surely, they are an increasing benefit to all the people and all the communities who are on the receiving end of your good deeds. I'd like to say a word, too, about your self-development programs, because this seems to me to be a fine field of usefulness for the pioneers. And I believe that the pioneer chapters can do a great deal to help the individual in his own efforts and to help him grow in his own way. And if he succeeds in that as an individual, it seems to me then that he is the great benefactor, but surely the business and the community will share in those benefits importantly. The third development that I would like to comment on, that you've talked about too, I believe that the pioneers are extremely wise in taking a look at the increasing number of pioneers and the increasing proportion of the pioneers who are life members. Certainly with all of this growth and all of the change that goes with such growth, we need to be certain that the pioneer organization is rightly organized for the future problems that come with that growth and that change. Now, growth and change are two words that apply to our business, in the telephone business too. And it seems that it might be proper for me to make a few comments here tonight about the overall telephone job and about growth and change in it. Because we've had a tremendous growth and a tremendous change since you and I, all of us, came into this business. And we're certainly on the verge of seeing a lot more. Some of it is going to be made for us, and some of it we're going to make. So I'd like to talk briefly about some of the prospects and what they mean to the telephone men and women in our organization. And the first of all, I think, the combined populations of the United States and Canada are very likely going to increase by some 65 million people in the next 15 odd years. The second is that there's a reasonable prospect that the standard of living will continue to rise and rise just as it has in the past 15 years. And that more people will have the means to buy not only the basic telephone service, but all of the particular services and instrumentalities that meet their individual needs and their tastes. And third, I believe that communications technology is advancing very rapidly, so that all of us are going to have many, many new and improved services and instrumentalities to offer. And the fourth, other businesses are advancing, they're changing just as rapidly as we are in their technology, in the way they are organized, and then their ability to furnish and produce new services. Many of these businesses have grown up, and thousands, if not millions, of people in this country are now employed as a result of the invention of the transistor, microwave, and a great many things that have come out of our own technology. But those same things are going to be sold in the marketplace, and they become our competition. Now, all of these factors together and their impact on us is bound to be tremendous. And these same factors are bound to be tremendous on the economy of our country. For example, in our industry, by 1975, it may well be that we'll be serving 69 or 70 million families here in the United States and Canada, as contrasted with the 42 million that we serve today. Today in the Bell system, we have slightly more than one residence telephone extension for each individual main station in a home. 15 years from now, we aim and feel quite certain that we'll have as many residence extensions as we have residence main stations. Today, about half our customers have individual lines in their homes. And by 1970, only about 10 years from now, we expect that 8 out of 10 will have individual lines. And by 1965, 5 years from now, I would expect that all of our customers will have available to them direct distance dialing. And if the years go on and the average time for completing a long distance call is going to come down and down, and I would suggest that it might be in the neighborhood of 40 to 45 seconds in this span of time. Ocean telephone cables are going to multiply, and one day we are going to be able to dial all of the countries, I'm sure, that are reached by these cables. And at some future time, it's fully to be expected that telephones in homes will be concealed, and beyond that, who knows? Now, if we're given the necessary frequencies, as we are persistently seeking from the Federal Communications Commission, I'm sure, too, that the thousands of mobile telephones now installed in automobiles will be in the millions. Electronic switching will undergo its first trial next year, and this and other developments are going to make the variety and the novelty and the availability of many, many conveniences not now available by any means within our reach. I mentioned other services or other businesses as likewise being aggressive in new things and in the advancing changes that are taking place in this country. They too are going to expect from us a variety of new services that we so far may not have thought of. Improved private line services might be an example, data phone service, data communication. Sometime in the future, I would guess that we we're going to have to furnish a combined voice and picture service over a telephone network. These are just a few of the challenges and the opportunities that lie ahead. But what I mainly wish to do is to suggest to you some of the implications that these things and many others hold for our business and our people. One is that this big industry of ours is going to grow bigger and bigger, much bigger. This makes it all the more important for all of us to conduct ourselves and show ourselves in each community as people who deserve the trust and the esteem of their fellow citizens. And this is not a new idea in the Bell system. We've been doing that with distinction for years. But we have to face the fact that as all of these changes take place, as other people get active in these fields I've mentioned, that our responsibilities are continuously on the increase as our growth is on the increase. And we must measure up. And that is becoming more difficult and more important all the time. Along this line, too, I think that we have become more imaginative, or will have to become more imaginative, in figuring out how to get the most value out of the technical developments and the technical things that our people all over the system are constantly coming up with. The question is, will we realize all of the possibilities that these things present? Will we use them to the limit? We won't, unless we explore our markets and the thinking and the needs of the people of this country literally from stem to gudgeon. Only if we learn what people want and then organize ourselves to meet those wants almost before they know they want them. Only if we can do that and devise these things ahead of the time when they come knocking on our door will we be fully meeting what this business ought to do. So with all of this, it seems to me that every technical step we take ahead, that there's more and more need, not less, for human effort and human brains. There never was a time in this business, I'm sure, when there was more opportunity for people who really wanted to put their shoulder to the wheel, to use their ingenuity, to find a receptive attitude for new ideas, and to have the fun of doing that. Another prospect is that our business is faced with more and competition on the one hand, and with competition goes more risk. Today more than yesterday, and tomorrow more than today, we're selling these so-called optional services and conveniences. One of the most important and wonderful things we've injected into our business in the last period of time has been our marketing and our sales activities, in my judgment. Yet, along with it, comes a risk that hasn't existed in our business before. There, we must compete with the products and the services of all other industry. And please remember, as I pointed out before, that other businesses are humping along, turning out these new things just as fast as they know how and just as fast as we are. And to get our share of this customer's dollar and to get our share of the fun out of working in this business, we are going to have to compete and compete and compete with all kinds of new and improved ideas, gadgets, products that the consumer is faced with from all fronts today. Moreover, when the economic downturns come and people feel like pinching their pennies a little bit, they can easily ask us to remove all of these optional services, these choices that we're offering people, and keep just the basic service and still get their basic needs well taken care of. Clearly, therefore, the investment that we make to provide these increased conveniences is more risky than what we in this business have been in the habit of managing. And it becomes all the more important that we earn enough in good times to be able to stand the gaff when the going gets harder. I'm sure all of you who are pioneers or have been very long remember times when we couldn't do that. To me, that's one of the most vital things about this business that every man and woman should be interested in, that we should minimize any such exposure that occurs to this business and the people in it. However, I think that the matter of how the telephone industry ought to earn in the future goes quite a bit deeper than that. This increasing competition with other industry that I've spoken of, why should we engage in it, you might ask? Why should we try to come up with these new ideas, these new instruments, these new systems that are going to serve our customers better? Why undertake new ventures? Why accept these new risks? Those are good questions. They deserve good answers. My own answer is that we simply must do all of these things to be a progressive industry, one that makes an important contribution to the economy and to the society of our nation, one that is well regarded by the public, one that is competent, and one that competent, forward-looking, aggressive people want to work in. Beyond that, I believe also that certain factors which are fundamental to the progress of other businesses cannot be absent from ours. I mean specifically the profit incentive, the drive for financial success or progress, and the expectation of a reasonable reward. I admit that I am prejudiced in favor of telephone people. There's no other group in the United States to compare with them. They have many distinctive qualities. They've shown them again and again, to their own great satisfaction, I'm sure, and to their own great credit and the credit of the service. Nevertheless, we're not basically different from other people, and neither are telephone share owners different from other people. And neither are the people who enter this business, or who will enter it, or this industry, next year, 5 or 10 years from now. So to do our best for ourselves, for our customers, and for the people who are coming into this business in the years ahead, I'm convinced that we need to work in the same economic climate that makes for progress in the private enterprise generally in this country. To borrow a sentence from last year's AT&T report, I quote, "We cannot work effectively in one kind of climate while the rest of business is moving ahead in another. Particularly, we cannot do so as our own business faces increasing competition and as our risks increase." And to speak directly to the point of what we ought to earn, I'll say it in this way, that I think telephone earnings, broadly comparable with the earnings realized by other well-managed, progressive businesses in competitive industry, are necessary to produce the very best in telephone service. Moreover, I think such earnings are necessary to enable us to provide, in the long run, the best service at the lowest price. Why? Because they will give investors the incentive to provide the great sums of capital that we need to bring about and meet this growth. Because they are going to allow us to spend money to affect long-run economies. Because they will stimulate and spur all of us to use our inventiveness and our energy in this competition that I've been talking about. Because they will encourage us to take the risks that will benefit all our customers. Because they will give the business the vigor, the vitality that it must have to attract top-grade people who will have both the desire and the ability to make this industry of ours contribute more and more to the world. So far as the Bell system is concerned, it seems to me that this view I've just expressed is simply an extension of a long-term policy, long-standing, in fact. 45 years ago, Theodore Enville, then president of the AT&T company, said this. He said that the pioneers of the Bell system recognized that telephone service, as they saw it at that time, was in the broadest sense a public utility, that upon them rested the public obligation to give the best possible service at the most reasonable prices, consistent with risk, investment, and continued improvement and maintenance of the property. Then in the late 1920s, President Walter Gifford, he expressed similar views in terms often summarized as follows. You're all familiar with them. He said that the policy of the Bell system was to furnish the best possible service to lowest cost consistent with financial safety, to pay salaries and wages in all respects adequate and fair and just, and to make sure that individual merit is discovered and recognized. Mr. Gifford also commented that this policy was bound to succeed in the long run, and in his mind, there was no justification for ever acting in any other way than for the long run. Then in 1953, the statement that was put out by the AT&T Board of Directors said this: it is our responsibility that the company shall prosper. We think it all important, therefore, that we furnish the best telephone service that it is in our power to provide, a service high in value and steadily improving, at a cost to the user that will always be as low as possible, and at the same time, keep the business in a good financial health. The board then stressed, too, that the business must provide good pay and opportunity for employees and act always for the long run. Thus, over a period of many years' experience and reflection, have produced some very clear and consistently sound and basic policies. And as I reflect on the goals of our business today, I would stress not one or two of these, but all of them. I would call them aspects of Bell system policy, and I would list them this way. It makes service paramount. It emphasizes constant improvement. It recognizes that progress and prosperity go hand in hand. It calls for prices no higher than they need to be to assure the financial health of the business and continuing service betterment. It is always alert to the risks that face this business, and it brings out that this is a business of people who need the incentives of good pay and full opportunity to get this job done. And it takes a long view. Now, looking ahead, it seems to me that our opportunities to improve, to enlarge communication services are probably greater now than they have ever been before. And I say this with high hopes and tremendous confidence. But I also have to say one more thing in conclusion. I think that telephone progress In fact, all progress in this country that is really worthwhile is going to depend on how we tackle certain fundamentals. For one thing, I believe Americans must demand, and they must find a way of getting fiscal performance by their state and their national elected and appointed officials. We just cannot build a better life in this country or keep the respect of other nations or exercise effective leadership in the world if we're going to continue to be careless and reckless in handling our money or make a habit of spending more than we take in. In our own jobs, to realize the opportunities that are ahead, times call for the utmost effort. You might say our utmost effort as citizens and as telephone people and as pioneers. Our utmost effort, personal and private enterprise effort, and to encourage such enterprise, a good business climate is essential. This means that to give top flight service, we must also get understanding of what it takes and what it's required to do it. We must get it ourselves first. We must spread it around second. We must help to create the conditions that will encourage all telephone people to do their best. And in this endeavor, I firmly believe that the pioneers, as they always have, by their ability and their leadership in this business, and also by their thoughtful participation in public affairs in their own communities, will make a contribution of first importance to the whole future of communications and the welfare of this country, and to all the people serving in and served by this great industry of ours as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Capel, for that thought-provoking and challenging address. As you notice, it was full of challenges. Your optimistic look into the future, your restating of the Bell System fundamental policy, and also the truism that only a financially healthy company can operate in the best interest of the public, the employees, and the owners. I know I speak for all those here, Fred, and all those in the Bell System, we accept your challenge. I wonder if you'd take about a 3-minute stretch and stay right at your table. We're going over to the speaker's table, but you can remain this way because the entertainment to follow will be on the stage. Thank you. Facing the stage, I just have a very short remark to make. I just couldn't let this evening pass without recognizing the men and women who have worked so hard to make this a pleasant week for our wonderful pioneers here in Cleveland. I would like Mr. Milner, our general chairman, the members of his committee, subcommittees and sub-subcommittees and sub-sub-subcommittees, if they'll stand and let's give them a real hand so that we may pay our respect for the job well done. Now, Mr. Milner, will you take over and introduce the choir and the chorus, please?
Thank you, Walter. Ladies and gentlemen, for many years, one of our favorite out-of-hour activities here has been choral singing. We have a group of about 80, each being a regular full-time employee of the Ohio Bell Telephone Company, the Western Electric Company, or the Long Lines Department of the American Telephone and Telegraph Company. The Ohio Bell Men's Chorus was formed in 1922 and has been a continuing organization since that time. It is interesting that two of the men singing tonight, one with Ohio Bell and one with the Western Electric Company, have been members of this group since it started. Also of particular interest is the fact that the first appearance of this group was on September 30th, 1922, at the Pioneer General Assembly, which was then in progress here in Cleveland. That was exactly 37 years ago last night. The ladies' choir was started in 1942, and the two groups were first combined for a concert in 1943. This entire group sang for the Pioneer General Assembly meeting here in Cleveland in October 1946. These folks represent a real cross-section of our company. They work at their regular jobs, and they rehearse in the evenings. They sing for the love of singing, and I'm sure that you will carry away with you some of their enthusiasm. It is with a great deal of pride that I present to you the Ohio Bell Combined Ladies' Choir and Men's Chorus under the very capable direction of Mr. Wynn Morris.
Rejoice and sing. You. Thank you.